Welcome in to this week's edition of New Track Record Podcast. Caleb Hatch and Justin Kinney. Hi, Justin.
Hello, Caleb. How are you?
Doing well. Kind of worn down into the week. It's been busy.
Yeah, you put in some hard hours, man. You're here mid-morning-ish, you know, roll through the evening, and then some days you have to stick around to deal with me.
That is true. And when I'm not sticking around dealing with you, I'm usually sticking around doing basketball. So
yeah, right? And it's a busy week here in Indiana with girls' sectionals going on. Weather permitting, it's a winter wonderland out there.
That is true. And I don't know how to segue out of that. It's IndyCar conversation.
And with that, Romain Grosjean.
Yeah, Romain Grosjean, driver of the number 51 Dale Coyne Racing with Rick Ware Racing Honda in the NTT IndyCar Series in 2021. Finally official.
Yeah, and it was obviously a story that many people were sitting on waiting for it to become public, because once it was put out there, everybody had a story and another story and sometimes another story about Romain Grosjean.
So there are a lot of little factoids out of all of this. One, did you catch any of his Twitch stream?
I did not.
Okay, I caught a little bit of it, as in, like, I'm talking 5 to 10 minutes of it as I was getting ready for work. And what stuck out to me, you can tell he's excited. He thinks this is a great opportunity for him, and it sounded more like this is his new career. Like, yes, he's operating on a one-year deal as of now, according to the press conference they did later with Dale Coyne and Rick Ware, but it sounds like this is what he wants to pursue for a bit, not just, you know, 1 year and try to go back to F1. It didn't sound like that was the direction he was going.
Yeah, I would think at least this is a couple year commitment, you know, road and streets this year. He hinted at maybe at some point, maybe running. I feel like he'll run an Indianapolis 500.
I do too.
You know, maybe in 2022, but I think, you know, at least it's a 2 year commitment. You know, I don't think he goes to Formula One, back to Formula One, unless it's in a solid ride, but I just don't see that being realistic to me.
No, I don't either. And he said he'd be interested in maybe running at the track formerly known as Gateway. He mentioned he'd do the test for Indy, which he mentioned March, but I'm not sure, you know, if that's late March, if they've actually officially confirmed that test at Indy, that he would do that. But he made it sound like for now, Super Speedway is definitely out for now, but he made it sound like maybe he could be convinced to do the 500. And, you know, Texas out, and I think we both understand that. Indy out for now, I think we understand that. And what I find fascinating is before the F1 crash that he had, he was set to do the full season.
And did it anywhere confirm that it was going to be with Coyne? I never saw that. He just said he was committed to the full season before Bahrain, but never saw if it was for Coyne or he was just, you know, committed to a full season. So, yeah, it was an interesting point and amazing how a crash can change, you know, from going not wanting to do anything, probably at least initially, to I got to get back in the seat, and IndyCar being that spot. I think it's pretty cool. And I think, you know, mentioning Kevin Magnussen and his success in IMSA already and just his ability to be competitive, and Romain Grosjean having a great quote that we were talking about before we started recording about being competitive again. Sometimes that's all these guys are looking for. I mean, does Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen need money? No, they don't. But man, they have that competitive edge to at least be in the conversation for leading races, which Kevin Magnussen was able to do. And now Romain Grosjean looking to do the same thing and mix it up once again in auto racing, something he hasn't been able to do with Haas.
Yeah, he called in a quote to Marshall Pruitt on Racer.com, he referred to his F1 car as a tractor compared to the Mercedes, which is quite entertaining.
Yeah, and I think he was probably being kind. He probably would have put a certain adjective in front of tractor if he would have been able to. So, yeah, you know, differing thoughts on Romain Grosjean. You can go all over social media or all over, you know, comment sections on different websites and see some people excited about it, some people respecting his decision not to do super speedways, and then on the other spectrum, people not feeling that you know, he's a good addition, or, you know, comparing to what his results were in Haas, or the fact that, you know, maybe he was a magnet for accidents a little bit, maybe being a detriment to his IndyCar career. I'm open. I'm glad Romain Grosjean. We talk about it, Caleb. If somebody enters the series and they add to the talent pool of the series, then it is a good thing. And Romain Grosjean, whether you love him or hate him or whatever your opinion of him as a driver is, I think we can all agree that he adds to the depth of talent in the series.
Oh, no question. And to answer your question earlier about if it was with Dale Coyne as far as the full season, he told Racer's Chris Medlin, who's an F1 reporter, that a quote, "I got in contact with Dale Coyne before the Bahrain incident, I think the week before Imola or a couple weeks before Imola, and we got on very nicely. He made us an offer and I was going to do the full championship. But then obviously Bahrain happened and he goes on from there." So sounds like that was pretty well set as far as the full season. And, you know, you mentioned the talent level. You have three rookies that are completely different in the disciplines they've competed in, but the talent level is just astounding, with Jimmy Johnson, Romain Grosjean, and Scott McLaughlin being the three rookies. Yeah, we don't have a guy coming in from lights, but we have three guys who are very well established and known in racing circles throughout the world, who bring such a high level of talent. And I think, you know, it's just kind of incredible the level of talent coming in, because I think between the three of them, and this is courtesy of Trackside Online, 19 championships, 214 wins, and top level racing approximately between the three of them, which is just insane.
It's wild. And I think you have three completely different situations with these three rookies. I think you're looking at Jimmy Johnson and you're saying, twilight of his racing career, wants to try different things. We don't expect him to be a race winner in IndyCar. If he gets on a podium, it's crazy. But he just wants to try something different here in the last few years before he hangs it up. Then you have Romain Grosjean, who I feel is in the quote-unquote prime of his career at 34, a guy that was good enough to get a Formula One seat. And you can talk, well, you know, how much money did he bring? But I feel like there were other guys out there with more money that could have gotten the Haas seat, but he did for a reason. I think we've seen enough of him in Formula One competitively to say he's pretty competent, and I feel he could be a guy that in a couple years, give him 1 or 2 years, could be a race winner in IndyCar. I think he's just in the midst of his racing career. And then I feel like you have Scott McLaughlin, who I feel his best years are in front of him, you know, particularly in open wheel racing. And so I think you have three different tiers, three different guys at three different spots in their careers that are entering IndyCar in 2021 as rookies. It's as crazy of a rookie class as you're going to get. And like you said, Caleb, all we're missing is that 19, 20-year-old Indy Lights champion.
Yeah. You know, without the Indy Lights champion, maybe like a slight disappointment because you don't have someone moving up. Obviously, not possible just due to events of the last year. But when you add the caliber of race car drivers that IndyCar is adding, I mean, this is a huge step up as far as drawing eyeballs, you know, outside of just the IndyCar fan base as well.
No doubt. So,
and F1 on their Twitter gave Romain a shout out and a full article, you know, congratulating him on the move to IndyCar.
Conceivably, you have to think, okay, IndyCar gains a couple people from NASCAR that otherwise wouldn't watch, with Jimmy Johnson. You have to feel the same with Romain Grosjean. Do they bring over a mass of people? No, but I can guarantee you there's people that watch IndyCar races next year because of Jimmy Johnson and Romain Grosjean.
Yep.
And potentially when you look at Scott McLaughlin, does he bring some people over from supercars that otherwise wouldn't watch IndyCar racing?
Definitely.
Right?
I mean, he was the dominant guy in that series.
Absolutely. So, you know, three straight titles in supercars, I want to say. So I don't envision a huge influx of viewers for these three guys, but I also see each of them bringing a certain amount of casual fans that are going to tune into IndyCar that otherwise wouldn't.
All right, so some just run through some details on this announcement on things. One, great write-up, an interview by David Mulcher Lopez on motorsport.com. And, you know, Dale Coyne had talked about the other week how he had talked with, like, what was it, like 100 drivers when he signed Ed Jones?
Yeah.
And some of the names that were, you know, talked about for this seat as well, of course, Grosjean, Kevin Magnussen, George Russell, Alex Albon, Sergio Perez, Danny Kvyat, also Nico Hülkenberg, some F2 drivers, F1 test drivers, and probably one or two potential aces from Super Formula in Japan, which of course is where they got Alex Palou last year. So they went through a lot of people that they talked with. And
isn't
I'm not
that
saying
wild?
All I of mean, them were options, but, you know.
Now, is that them reaching out or those drivers reaching out to Coyne?
Probably a mix of both.
I mean, even if you say half of that group that you said approached Dale Coyne, that says something about the series, because while Coyne competitive, it's not an Andretti, it's not a Penske, it's not a Ganassi, right? So if IndyCar and Dale Coyne's getting this type of interest from drivers across the world in that seat, what does that say about IndyCar compared to where it was five years ago, 10 years ago?
I think it really started in earnest with Alonso coming for the 500, because it opened people's eyes to the 500 again.
Sure.
And then he came back again, and, you know, they've had Jimmy Johnson now come over, and it keeps adding to the credibility of people not only being aware, but getting into it because of these guys coming over and trying it out.
Absolutely. I feel now you're at a position where you're getting more teams interested. It used to be that. We used to really focus on, okay, teams, when will they join IndyCar from other disciplines? And now maybe the push is more driver-based, and that in turn makes it more viable for other teams. So we used to think, okay, the teams have to be first and then the drivers. Are we seeing maybe more a driver first type thing, or at least if there's interest there, and we can go down and argue, you know, ride buyers or whatever. There's a lot of drivers out there with not enough talent to be an IndyCar that can be ride buyers for sure. But there's also a plenty amount of skilled drivers that do belong in IndyCar that are quote unquote ride buyers. So I'm not going to throw a negative connotation on that term, because I think it could be beneficial to the series. And I think we're seeing that.
Yeah, you mentioned as far as bringing money. Yeah, I'm sure he's bringing some money. The livery that he had on his stream featured Richard Mille, which is like a high-level watch and mind maze. Those were some of his sponsors. There's, I think, another sponsor whose name escapes me. And then it had Dale Coyne sponsors on the car, Guaranteed Rate, which was on Palou's car for much of last year. Valpak as well, which has been on their cars. According to motorsport.com, a primary backer should be confirmed by the end of this month, probably a week or two away from the announcement as far as the primary sponsor, that according to, I believe, Rick Ware on this interview on motorsport.com. So, you know, this is obviously he's bringing a little bit of money, but I don't think it's a lot. I don't think it's, you know, the full budget might be $1 million, $2 million. No more than three.
Yeah, we've seen different numbers thrown out. There was, you know, for a while, the $3 million was being thrown out for that Grosjean was bringing. I mean, max, like you said, it's that. I feel maybe it's closer to that, too.
Yeah, but I don't think it's that much. But obviously, he brings his personal sponsors over, but the team's going to be able to sell this. And I don't think, you know, you can't overlook that. Some other notes as far as sponsor goes, this from Trackside Online. Rick Ware says that Nurtec ADT, a migraine medication, will be part of the IndyCar sponsorship program along with their NASCAR program. That was on their IMSA car, the Rolex 24, over the weekend that Rick Ware Racing had. So again, not a surprise. The contract committed to a year according to Nathan Brown of the Indy Star, but they have not, you know, gone beyond that in terms of a contract length. But Brown says, given how Grosjean is to prove something, sounds like he expects to have him around for multiple years. And, you know, update on the hand. I found this fascinating. He kind of said his hand was at 50%. It's not fully healed. It's still kind of pink. And he's going to do a test, you know, here in not too long. What is it? February, I think, 18th or 22nd at Barber, then Laguna Seca the week after. Four tests before the season opener, according to Brown. And with the hand, Romain said that he's driven with a broken hand in F1 twice.
So this is not that
bad. Got on the podium once, so that's wild.
Yeah, right?
And let's see what else. First test, okay, is February 22nd, so I mentioned that. And then as far as the Indy 500 test, apparently there's a test sometime in March. Grosjean didn't really commit to that, but he'd like to do a test at least at Indy. But this year's 500, again, he basically said to his family, you know, no, I'm not going to do the super speedways, but I'd be interested in the short ovals. You know what's crazy is, I don't know if you caught this. I don't know if he said this on the stream or, you know, in a press conference, but Grosjean said that his, I think it was like his manager or agent texted him, you know, day after his crash and basically said, Indy is out.
Yeah, right.
And they were set to commit to a full season.
Yeah, it was more of a, like, IndyCar is out, right? And it was kind of, you know, maybe in the immediate aftermath, yeah, but you can't take the racing out of somebody like that, you know? And once he felt like, okay, I'm still in one piece, his next thought was, you know, we see it so many times when drivers get injured, and even seriously, you know, they're always asking, when can I get back in the seat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Romain Grosjean, after probably some introspective thoughts, and said, so, you know, I still got some racing. He even said, you know, quotes to that effect, there's still, you know, auto racing within me. I have the drive still. And we're going to see that on display coming up.
And props to him, because his first test is going to be at Barber, which is a very physical track for the drivers. That's going to be a tough introduction, I would say, to driving an Indy car.
No doubt. I mean, I think that's going to be, it's going to be difficult. One of the most physical places that they go. So, and no power steering. That's a big thing, right?
Yep.
I mean, not say, you know, I'm sure Romain Grosjean is in phenomenal shape, but it'll be a little different from, you know, the cush drive, so to speak, that you have in an F1 car.
Yeah, it's a different style of training. F1, you want to be as lean as possible.
Yeah.
Whereas an Indy car, yeah, you want to be lean, but you have to at least bulk up in the arms just because, like you said, no power steering. All right, so on Grosjean, that's kind of where we're at with everything. And we thought we'd have answers on the oval driver for the 51 car and the whoever's running the multiple, you know, 4, 5, 6 races in the 52 car. And we still don't quite know where that stands.
We do not. Is Pietro Fittipaldi, maybe? Charlie Kimball? Who knows?
Sounds like Cody Ware, which is Rick Ware's son, will be in one of those seats and will probably run the 500 in one of those seats, probably run a handful of races.
Could you see him just doing Texas and Indy, or do you think he'll get more?
I could see him doing a handful of races plus the Indy 500. And Nathan Brown of the Star says, Dale Coyne says the 52 car will almost certainly run more than the 500, probably 4 to 5 races plus the Indy 500. No plans, though, to expand to 3 cars full time. So I thought that was an option at one point.
Potentially. Maybe it is going in the future.
Maybe 2022.
Here's the issue I have with Cody Ware is there's no experience there.
Yep.
And you're telling me, and now this isn't official, but we're, you know, he's in the conversation, that his first IndyCar race is going to be at Texas?
Ugh.
I mean, at this point, I don't know what IndyCar could do. I mean, can you tell a team he's not ready to do that?
I mean, he's got to, you know, not only pass a test, but then do they still have the, like, 107 or 105% rule?
I think so.
I mean, either they have it, or if they don't, he'd just get black flagged.
I know, but, like, even, like, you know, on the start of a race, I mean, does he need to be there? Even if he's starting last, do you want to be around him?
No.
I mean, he's not raced any open wheel car, right? It's all stock cars.
Correct. And more on Cody. From Rick, said he will ultimately leave when and how Cody could be plugged in road, street, or oval up to Dale, but that he's prepared to fill the gaps if needed.
Okay, so
I expect Cody to be in the third car, running the 500 and then a handful of races, just depending on his cup schedule.
Maybe I'm the first to say this. You know, maybe, you know, a lot of other people are thinking it. Cody Ware is only in a seat anywhere right now because his dad owns the team.
Yeah.
His dad gets him. I mean, he's started Cup a handful of races. I'm scanning it. The best finish is 28th, I see. I mean, Xfinity, he had a 7th last year at Charlotte. But he's only in a seat because of his dad.
Now, he did win the Eurasian Le Mans series.
He did.
Last year.
Yes, which is four races.
He's at least tested in an IndyCar. He was at Sebring the other week.
Okay. I'm just saying, in my opinion, he is woefully underqualified to race an IndyCar.
I don't disagree. There was already talk, and Jenna Fryer tweeted this earlier today as we record on Thursday, February 4th. Cody Ware says there's been early talks on the 600-500 double, but he needs some sponsor funds because he doesn't have a plane to get in between the two. Commercial flights probably won't work. Yeah, you think?
I mean...
And then she clarified, it was talked about as a possibility. Lack of plane shuts down the talks.
He started one Daytona 500, 2019. He finished 39th, and he wants to do the double? I mean, I know money talks. This is America. Money talks. I get it, but come on. Is this a deal where Coyne had to agree to this Cody Ware thing if it does come to fruition to get Rick Ware on board? I mean, nepotism is strong, particularly in auto racing. I get it, but there's a legit safety issue, in my opinion, if Cody Ware is spinning that car around with very limited open wheel experience at Texas Motor Speedway.
I would feel more comfortable if his first race is Indy because there's plenty of track time.
Right, I would
agree. And then it wouldn't surprise me if he ran Detroit and then throw in some other random races. But again, I see him in the 52. Pietro Fittipaldi could be the oval guy in the 51. And remember, he tweeted that picture with the number 51.
Yeah, right. Let's get Pietro Fittipaldi's opinion on what's going on.
Jenna Fryer also tweeted that Cody Ware will be running IndyCar races in 2021. This, you know, Rick Ware indicating this.
Of course he will
be running IndyCar races in 2021. No announcement at this time. So it's interesting. It's like, did they jump the gun on Fittipaldi and Ware? Because that was kind of the rumor, and they were even kind of teasing it. In fact, during the Daytona 500 broadcast, they mentioned that there'd be an announcement on Wednesday. And they mentioned with Grosjean and with Cody Ware. So...
Well, I saw a tweet earlier today, and I can't remember the exact verbiage, but basically, Rick Ware Racing is entering its third year into Cup, I want to say, with a charter. It's the third year that
I saw this.
Charter.
I was confused, but also...
Basically, from what I understand, they're going to the third year of charter, and if they finish in the bottom five of owner points, like they have the first 2 years of having the charter, they can have the charter yanked from them by NASCAR.
Yeah.
So this isn't a team in Rick Ware Racing that is succeeding in Cup or even Xfinity and is like, hey, let's branch over into IndyCar because we have this Cup thing figured out, the stock car thing figured out. This seems to me like Rick Ware Racing and Rick Ware personally saying, okay, this is the sandbox we're going to play in with Cody, and we're doing it in Cup, and let's go do it in IndyCar. We have enough money to talk. We have enough money to get him a seat in IndyCar, and let's just have some fun with this thing. And I feel like it's dangerous. You know, you can be stupid in a stock car because you have a roof and all this stuff and not have much experience. I'm not saying Cody Ware couldn't be a competent IndyCar driver at some point. But he's never raced a race. He's never raced any race in the road to Indy, ever. And he's an option to be put in a seat opposite a crap ton of talent in this field. And while we said Romain Grosjean, a definite guy that adds to the depth of talent in this series, Cody Ware right now, as is, does not. And I feel like it's borderline dangerous to put him in a seat if he is racing at places like Texas.
Yeah, he may not be at Texas, and because that's a different scenario than all the other tracks on the schedule, I would say.
And I'm sorry, just because you raced at Talladega in Cup doesn't mean you're ready for Texas at Indy. I've said it before, Caleb. Texas scares me more than Indianapolis. It just every time. I'm just glad to get out of there. And you're going to put Cody Ware on that track? Not just putting himself in danger, but one wrong move, one stupid move puts other drivers in danger? I just feel like IndyCar should be more proactive in this thing and have conversations with this team and Coyne and Rick Ware and say, let's put a path to this. And maybe they do. Maybe, you know, maybe Rick Ware, they've already talked to IndyCar and they're going to get plenty of testing. I don't know. It just, it seems to me a little dangerous.
Well, and maybe that could be part of the holdup as far as
could be
getting this announced. You know, they have to get approval from IndyCar and, you know, you need X number of test days and we need to know the schedule in advance, you know, what races he's competing in, etc. Maybe that's part of the holdup.
Potentially. Could be. I just feel I would be much similar to you, Caleb, feel much better if this was just Cody Ware's first race was Indy.
Yeah, I just, again, the track time to me is everything.
Right.
You give him the track time, assuming we have a regular schedule, then it will give him a lot more time to get comfortable, a lot of laps. He can run some solo, he can run some in traffic, and, you know, actually be ready for the race.
Totally agree.
All right, so elsewhere on Silly Season News, we learned from Robin Miller's Racer.com mailbag. Shout out to Robin Miller also, because he was...
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Hall of Famer. So that's quite the honor among 9 new inductees into the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America. So congrats to Robin on that. Robin saying, AJ, as in AJ Foyt, likely going to run Charlie Kimball at Indy, and I expect Coyne and Carlin to field additional cars as well. So coming up with 33 cars won't be a problem. So as it stands right now, I believe we have 29 cars for Indy.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
And that's including the two extra Coyne cars that we don't have a, you know, the 51 and 52 for Indy, right?
Correct.
So,
as far as I understand it, yes.
Kimball and a third Foyt. There's 30. Carlin, 31. Two for Ryan Reinbold.
Uh-huh.
There's 33. Top Gun could be 34. Carlin could run another one. Could be 35. Ray Hall could run a third. That's 36. I mean, I think we'll have 35 or 36.
I agree. I put something together earlier.
Did I say Top Gun?
Yes, you okay. said Top Gun. I put together something earlier because we were talking about depth of field, depth of talent in IndyCar. And I look back over the last 30 years, just every 10 years, and I think we get really a good sense over these 30 years of where IndyCar was at various points of its career. 1990, really the heyday, right? I mean, truly the big guns, you know, huge crowds, all that stuff. 2000, not that much, right? I mean,
no,
was pretty bad. 2010, you felt, you know, maybe a coming back around a little bit, but still, you know, it was top heavy, right? So what I wanted to do is go through the 14th, 15th, and 16th place drivers in each of these years, 90, 2000, 2010, 2020, to really kind of see if we can gauge the depth of talent at each of those years and different parts of the IndyCar lifespan of the last 30 years. So we start in 1990, of course, Kart PPG, Al Unser Jr. won the title that year, held off Michael Andretti and Rick Mears. Here's your 14th and 15th, 16th place here, Caleb. Teo Fabi was 14th.
All right.
Scott
Race
Brayton,
winner.
Yep. Scott Brayton, 15th.
And future pole winner.
Yep. And Roberto Guerrero, 16th.
Also future pole winner.
So I feel like that shows the depth of that field.
Yeah.
That
well,
year.
Back then, the guys who were early, you know, on in their careers who competed in the IRL days, like early on in the IRL, you know, I'm talking 96, 97, 98, like they were lucky to make the race.
Right.
You know, before the split. But again, continue on.
Yeah, I mean, no, but it's true. I mean, you had Foyt out of the top 10. Now, granted, he missed the final two races after, I think that was the year he got hurt at Road America, was it not?
I thought that was in the 80s.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
But he finished 11th out of the top 10. Scott Goodyear's 13th. So anyway, it just shows the depth of the talent in 1990. We can fast forward to 2000, your favorite year of IndyCar racing, I'm sure. 14th was Stefan Grosjean. Buzz Calkins was 15th.
He raced? Buzz Calkins raced in the 2500?
2000.
I didn't realize
this
that.
Is an Indy race. This is the season. Season long.
Oh, season long.
Yeah,
standing.
We're doing season long stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. And then 16th is Ayrton Dare.
Yeah, not quite the
okay.
same depth.
That was 2000. 2010, let's move right along. 14th was Rafa Matos.
Okay.
15th, Mario Marais.
All right.
16th, Alex Lloyd.
One
very good.
Yeah.
Last year.
I was going to say, who did what last year?
Last year, here we are. 14th was Rinus VK.
Mm-hmm.
Rookie of the year. Won a pole. 15th, Jack Harvey.
All right. And he didn't do a full season. Jack, or did he?
Yeah, no, he did.
Jack did. It's his first full season.
Yeah. And 16th, Alex Palou.
All right. Again, a rookie. So two rookies and a guy doing his first full season.
Now, I feel like it's maybe an incomplete for last year because who knows what the future holds for all three, to be honest, and two that were in their first year. But I do think we can say all three of those drivers have promising futures. Alex Palou now with Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah.
And Jack Harvey gotten better each and every year. And Rinus VK really showed exceptional talent last year going into the future. But I think that's something to consider as we look at the 10-year benchmarks from 1990. Man, it's rough 2000 and even 2010. You're going, ooh. But I feel like 2020, you're starting to see that depth of talent that, I don't know if you can say it's comparable to 1990, but you can definitely see just how deep the talent pool is. And then next year, you know, this coming year, you add Jimmy Johnson, Scott McLaughlin, and now Romain Grosjean.
Well, and when you go back, who are the first three in 1990?
The 14th, 15th, 16th place was Tio Fabi, Scott Brayton, Roberto Guerrero.
All right, so you have two veterans and a young guy.
Yeah.
So with that, I mean, guys who were experienced, who had won races, you know, in Guerrero and Tao Fabi won one race in his career, which I think, wasn't that the, he won the first race at Road America, I believe, or Mid-Ohio, it was something like that. But it was his only race win, and I think he won that in, it was like 82 or 84. But again, race winner. So you have two veterans, a rookie. Then 2000, you had Calkins, Grégoire, and Dare, just kind of like journeyman guys.
Right.
And then 2010, Marais, he had talent but crashed a lot. Alex Lloyd never really got much of a fair shot.
He was rookie of the year that year and then just kind of faded.
Yeah. And then who was the other one?
In 2010, it was Lloyd, Marais, and Matos.
Okay, Rafa Matos had a couple of years, a little bit of flash of talent, but I mean, no, when you're on a single car team and it's not a top team, it's kind of hard to do much with.
You know, one thing you mentioned, Tio Fabi, he won multiple races.
Oh, okay. I thought he just won one.
He won four times in 1983.
Oh, wow. So 83, then he won, is it Road America?
No, he won Pocono, Mid-Ohio, and then back-to-back at Laguna Seca and Phoenix.
Oh, wow.
That year. And then won Mid-Ohio a second time in 1989.
All right. I didn't realize he won that many races.
Me neither until I looked him up.
Good for him. And Guerrero won races, right?
He had to have won races. Yeah, I think. Well, yeah, I think he won a couple in Champ Car. Let's look real quick. He won Mid-Ohio in 87.
Okay.
And also Phoenix in 87.
All right.
So, to me, you know, it's tough to compare those three to the 2020 guys, considering the 2020 guys still have a lot of career in front of them, but it's a hell of a lot better than 2000 and 2010.
Yeah, and, you know, right now we're obviously basing it off potential for 2020, but early returns say that things are going to be positive.
Absolutely. And one is already with a top-tier team in Palou. So I just thought that was interesting to kind of look back because we talk so much about depth of talent in the series. And I think, you know, maybe those are little benchmarks, 10-year gaps, you know, between 1990, 2000, 2010, 2020, just in case you need a reminder how scant the field was for proven open wheel talent in some of those, you know, that decade plus kind of after the split.
All right. This from Nathan Brown of the Star. Kevin Lee spoke with Zach Veach at Daytona. This, again, came late last week. Zach said he's not looking for anything in the 500 this year and focusing solely on IMSA. If he's not doing that, he's not going to be in IndyCar at all. And then Oliver Askew, who got the late call-up to fill in for James Hinchcliffe due to Hinchcliffe having a conflict. We don't know what the conflict was. Understand it was not for health reasons.
Internet. Seems to be the ongoing issue for Hinch.
Probably couldn't get the Zoom call.
Yeah, you know,
properly.
Or just couldn't book that flight because he couldn't get the internet.
Yeah. But in an IndyStar.com article, Nathan Brown saying Hinchcliffe had a conflict and Askew was asked to fill in. The 2019 Indy Lights champion was hesitant to fill in too many details, even on how much lead time he'd been given to prepare for the endeavor. So Askew went and won the inaugural LMP3 class at the Rolex 24.
Show did.
Teamed up with Spencer Pigot, by the way.
Cool.
So he won. Also, congrats to Wayne Taylor Racing, Alexander Rossi, Elio Castroneves, part of that team, winning the overall and the DPI. But Oliver Askew sounded pretty confident in some of these quotes as far as getting an opportunity in IndyCar. Askew told the IndyStar in December, this is from the article, that he'd all but thrown in the towel on his 2021 IndyCar hopes, low in sponsorship backing with a crowded free agent market, looking for a return in 2022. But now, latest quote, we're still working all the angles possible. At this point, to do a full season, it would be tough, but it's not off the table. I don't think anything's off the table up until a couple of weeks before the first race, but I feel like I'm ready to get back in and show what I can do. That sounds pretty confident. And again, winning the Rolex 24 is not going to hurt, and getting a test that it's kind of a favor to Andretti to fill in last minute. He was available because Sebring and Daytona are like, what, hour and a half, hour apart?
Yeah.
Not that far. But a crazy couple of days for him, but that's a good opportunity. And you know, could we see him back in the 500 in a sixth Andretti car? Maybe, if they get the funding. I mean, you know that Andretti would be keen on having him back.
Right.
So that's another option. This from IndyCar Deep Throat. Connor Daly still in talks with Carlin to seal a deal to run all the ovals this year. I don't think that's a surprise, but Carlin hasn't announced Max Chilton yet. I think we all know that will happen. Chilton did the test the other week at Sebring, but I think that's where we stand on that. And I don't know. I think that pretty much covers the silly season stuff. We still don't know about the 51 and the 52 for ovals and
remain
extra
a mystery.
Races.
Well, I think hopefully Hinch is wasn't doing a body issue photo shoot. And that's why he wasn't at the test. So.
Quality reference there. Quality reference. You know, I wonder if it was like a visa issue or something. Or like, was it because of COVID and he couldn't, you know, go back and forth?
Yeah, could be. Who knows?
If he was in Canada. I assume he's in the States, though.
I imagine.
So who knows what the deal is there? And the other silly season news, Marco Andretti racing in Superstar Racing Experience, the SRX series, which is Tony Stewart's series that's running this summer. This makes perfect sense. Good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Just something to do on the side. Just those were the opportunities that he kind of hinted at as wanting to do. I think it'll be kind of a loose format, have a little fun. Not feel so stuffy and stiff and being asked the same questions every IndyCar weekend. Good for Marco.
And Indy Lights driver announcement. I'm going to butcher this, but Nikita Lastoshkin has been added by HMD Motorsports. So we look at the roster lineup. We're just awaiting the second Carlin car, which is partnered with J. Howard Driver Development. And we have 12 full-time guys.
How about that? That's good.
Yeah, 12. I'm checking my math.
We can add a couple more. I mean, 12 is good. 14's better.
15's excellent.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at for Indy Lights car count. And
maybe we should just skip every other year Indy Lights. Seems to be good for business, apparently. I'm joking.
I think cutting the Freedom 100 is good for business on the budgets. They said it didn't do it. Well, they said it didn't really do anything or affect anything, but you can't tell me that hasn't increased, you know, driver interest.
You know, it's fascinating that, you know, everybody has their own little theory on why that race went away. You know, Roger has said speeds were too much. You know, is that the reason? Is there another reason? Is he working an angle? Who knows? But everybody has a theory. But you know what? I mean, as exciting as that race was, you know, 2 days from now, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's no other than, wow, that was exciting. You know, the lasting impression of the Freedom 100 isn't very much, other than occasionally every May they'll show a highlight of how close the race was the year before or 2 years. You know what I mean? But other than that, what are you gaining? How many people are coming out to Carb Day for the Freedom 100?
Yeah, not that many.
And I think that's the thing of Roger Penske. What is this getting us? And I think to your point, Caleb, are you gaining more on the back end for teams that have less of a budget? Because you can not only tear up a race car, you can destroy a tub at Indy, right? A little bit more difficult to do that at a road and street.
And one other note as far as silly season and whatnot, this from Adam Stern of Sports Business Journal. Jimmy Johnson says that the door isn't shut 100% on possibly racing in the 2022 Indianapolis 500 should things go smoothly this year, but he added that the chances are still fairly slim at the moment. Again, he's got a 2-year deal with Chip Ganassi.
I see it happening.
I do too.
Both Jimmy Johnson and Romain Grosjean 2022 Indy 500.
All right. Well, if you agree or disagree with us, we'd love for you to interact with us. You can find us on social media. Our handle on Twitter is IndyCar Podcast. Facebook, like us on there. Just search for New Track Record. You can also email us, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. If you have questions, comments, rants, manifestos, send them our way. Also, you can find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to our weekly email so you never miss an episode. And you can find us on all of your podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts. And if you subscribe on there, do us a favor, give us a 5-star rating if you're really nice. And if you're extra nice, write a review. We'd greatly appreciate it. You can also find us on Spotify, Overcast, CastBox, Player FM, iHeart, Podchaser, 1380thefan.com, and episodes posted on the weekends at WOWO.com. All right, with that, time for the mailbag, and we have a lot to get to.
Let's do it.
So let's start off with some stuff from last week first, and then we'll work our way back up. Arcole replied saying, would you say this week's episode upload time is TBA? Hashtag Dale Coyne. Yeah, we had a little technical issue with our podcast platform, but everything's good. Chucky WX said, we'll let it slide. These are unprecedented times.
They are very much, and we hadn't dropped that yet.
Yeah, we had not.
Thank you for that.
A couple of comments from Vicky Lynn 26. Just listening to you guys talking about the move to Peacock and the reasons why. I can't speak for everyone, but I watch every race. I have a couple of issues with this. First is that Peacock isn't available outside of the U.S. I'm in Canada.
Totally.
My second issue is that stream races, unless you're able to watch the stream as it's happening, there's no way to watch later, hence the beauty of cable and a DVR. Unfortunately, as a retail worker, I can't have every race weekend off. FYI, I'd gladly pay for the service if I could. Yeah, I think that's the caveat that we always mention. It's great if you're American, but for Canadian fans and fans all around the world, the platforms are completely different.
Right, and you know, different deals with different countries to allow them to be broadcast. You know, I think we can say that Canada has kind of been ignored the last couple of years, and you know, the push to Peacock could further hurt that. But I feel like, you know, we always lean on Roger Penske, right? We always lean on, well, Roger will figure it out. But I do, seriously, I do really feel that Roger knows the importance of getting the maximum amount of eyes on your product, as long as there is an entity that is willing to broadcast it. So I do feel that Canada will be taken care of, hopefully, in the next couple years. And so that will be taken care of. I also see Peacock expanding elsewhere.
I saw that they had 33 million subscribers.
Well, I mean, once people heard that NBC Gold was going away, millions of people picked it up so they could watch IndyCar qualifying practice.
Yeah.
You know?
Hundreds to thousands.
Yeah. So, but how many of those are paying? Is that 33 million people paying?
The headline just said subscribers.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously there's a free tier and then there's two premium tiers. But hopefully, I totally understand that for sure. We're in a different spot here than up north. So you hope it gets figured out. You hope it doesn't alienate anybody for sure. But I also see Peacock, you know, broadening the horizons. They want to be in Canada, right? For sure. So hopefully they get it figured out. And I feel like going into this year, obviously, I don't see any races being stream only in 2021.
No, and that's not going to happen.
Hopefully, by 2022, Peacock has a plan for Canada and elsewhere. And hopefully, you know, we accommodate everybody that watch IndyCar, because everyone should be cherished, because there's not very many of us.
Hat tip to ScubaSteve85 for tipping us off on this. Did anyone else hear them just mention on the Rolex 24 broadcast that Grosjean would be racing for Rick Ware in IndyCar? Yeah, they apparently tipped that off.
They did?
During the broadcast.
I know. That's kind of where we heard it first.
This from Poet Shevchenko. It's interesting reading on some F1 fan sites, comments questioning Grosjean's mental health for making this move. And this comment specifically that he tweeted a picture of us. All better than driving an IndyCar. This guy is a strange person, said dead wish, death wish. If ever someone was not suitable for Indy, it's Grosjean. I hope he comes to his senses or his family just vetoes it. Okay. Interesting.
Really?
Surprising.
To each his own.
Yeah, I mean, they're entitled to their opinion, even if it's extreme. All right, so I posted a poll. Which 2021 IndyCar rookie are you most excited about? And the final results, I'm honestly surprised. 37% said Scott McLaughlin.
Uh-huh.
36% said Jimmy Johnson. And 27% said Romain Grosjean.
Well, I think one thing you can take out of that is I think there's a certain amount of excitement around every one of them from different people.
Yeah.
And so I voted McLaughlin just because I felt like he's has the best potential long term for IndyCar.
I would agree with that.
And so I feel like I don't want to say Jimmy Johnson is a novelty, because he's definitely not doing it as a novelty act, but I feel like the attention on him will be more than the track results should dictate. Basically, I feel like I'm afraid that media may approach it as a novelty, let blow it out of proportion, when I think Jimmy Johnson just wants to try a different racing series in a different discipline. And so he's not going to be a championship factor. He'll barely be a race factor most weeks. Romain Grosjean, a little bit different. I think he can be, you know, what's realistic expectations for Romain Grosjean? Do you feel, can he finish in the top 10? Are we talking top 15?
Top 15 seems very realistic. Okay. Maybe even top 12.
Yeah.
Definitely he can get some top 10 finishes, maybe sneak in a podium.
So, yeah, I think there's excitement there. And then there's also, you know, I think the majority of, I feel, die-hard IndyCar fans are probably most excited by Scott McLaughlin for the reasons we mentioned, that he's just this bright, youngish star that's being brought in by Roger Penske for his team, and he rarely brings rookies in. And I think, like, the future is bright for him and also for the series, which, for a guy with that caliber, another, you know, bullet in the chamber, so to speak, for Team Penske.
I went with Jimmy Johnson just because of it will get some NASCAR fans to watch that, you know, wouldn't normally watch, and he brings the name recognition. Obviously, Grosjean does for a worldwide audience, but for the American audience outside of people who follow F1, I mean, no one knows who he is. Same with Scott McLaughlin. Really talented, but outside of Australian people who follow supercars, I mean, people don't really know who he is. And so I went with Jimmy just for the you know, the name cachet. Some responses to this. Nick J. Fletcher, tough call. JJ brings domestic eyeballs. RG brings global eyeballs. SM is long-term eyeballs. At the end of the day, lots of eyeballs. That's a win.
Yeah, well, anything said. That helps the eyeballs. More eyeballs is good.
R. Cole on Twitter says, Jimmy Johnson, arguably one of the greatest Cup drivers of all time. Hopefully he brings more attention to the sport. But that might not be a good thing since some people don't like popular things like The Mandalorian.
Yeah, and I felt like there was some firing back and forth with the Mando this week. I'm a big Mandalorian guy. I'm a huge Star Wars guy, so I eat up anything
Star Wars.
Yeah,
his comment was directed at me.
Yes. You didn't say you don't like The Mandalorian.
No, I didn't say that.
You don't jump on the trends that are streaming shows. So have you seen Stranger Things?
No, I'm never going to watch that show.
Me neither. Really? No. Why not? You don't like children?
No, there are just some shows that I know I'm probably just not going to like.
Okay.
Like, it's just not my kind of thing. Like, that kind of show. Like, if I watch TV, I generally want to laugh.
Okay.
You
want some lighthearted moments.
Yeah, I just want to be entertained.
Is it kind of campy, though, isn't it? I haven't watched it either.
I don't know.
Game of Thrones?
No, I'm never going to watch that.
Really? Okay. Okay. And will you ever watch The Mandalorian?
Maybe.
Okay. So, all right. Well, open yourself up to further criticism there as we move on. But to be honest, I've never watched Stranger Things, and I'm only through the first season of Game of Thrones. So that could put me in the crosshairs as well.
Game of Thrones definitely got way too popular. Plus, I'm not like a sci-fi guy. Like, yes, I watch Star Wars, you know, and have seen all those, but sci-fi or like
just not just like fantasy.
Lord of the Rings, fantasy, yeah, that stuff just doesn't do it for me.
Well, and it's tough too because it's so popular, it's impossible to avoid, almost to the point where I get where you're coming from. You're just like, I can't invest in this and be engaged or whatever. But then again, you know, everybody knows The Mandalorian because of Baby Yoda, so you're already just kind of spoiled anyway.
Well, and with Game of Thrones, everyone complained about the finale, so.
Yeah, well, why are you going to rush to watch it when everybody just bashes the last season?
Yeah, exactly. So this from Zach Curley 8771. Wasn't the biggest Grosjean fan in F1, but very excited for him to join the grid. How cool would it be for him to win a race after being arguably minutes, if not seconds, away from death not 6 months ago? I'm rooting for him. Yeah, I think...
Absolutely.
I'm rooting for the guy, too. I mean, I want him to do well because he will stick around and be in IndyCar.
And do you feel that it... How likely is it that we have Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen on the IndyCar grid at some point together?
Fairly high.
I would think so. Not happening this year.
No, maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Yeah. Marcus Ericsson, I'm looking at you. The clock is ticking. but if Grosjean sticks around for a third year, I definitely see Magnussen somewhere. So much like Roger Penske, Chip Ganassi always has a plan, and I feel like he has a plan for Kevin Magnussen, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think long term they sign him, they couldn't get him into the IndyCar seat in time. But guarantee you they would have done that if that was a true possibility.
Yeah, I'd agree.
All right, so that wraps up our mailbag. Again, you can always tweet us, IndyCar Podcast, the handle on Twitter, and we'll get to your tweets in the following week's episode. So that wraps up the mailbag. All right, so did you see this, Justin?
I did. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm like, you don't even know what I'm going to bring up here. This is impressive. Headline. This is on one of our favorite topics for the show. Ferrari rules out IndyCar move after Haas staff migration. GPFans.com.
Really? Well, didn't we already kind of get an indication that that wasn't going to happen?
Yeah, but it's just more indication more it's indication. Not going
to
happen.
I mean, more of the prancing horse just teasing people.
We can move on, I think.
Thank you, God.
It's never going to happen.
I never felt...
Stop trying to make Ferrari happen.
I never felt good about it.
I liked the idea of it because it was good fodder. But
yeah, it was. And, you know,
I never
you thought
felt
about it. Oh, my
confident.
Gosh, Ferrari and IndyCar, that's exciting. And then the more you looked at it, you said, A, I'm not sure that's the best thing. And B, I don't see it happening. People are saying, what, you wouldn't want Ferrari and IndyCar? I mean, we've touched on that before. I feel like Ferrari would have too many caveats to join the series. They would, you know, either demand to have a separate chassis or develop their own, all this stuff. I just, you know, they could come in and outspend everybody. And then where are you at? Just Ferrari dominating the sport? I feel like there were too many potential pitfalls even before they seriously showed interest. So in a perverse way, I'm glad they turned it down.
All right. There are a couple livery reveals within the last week.
Both Will, sharp.
Yes. Will Power in the 5G matte black car for Penske. So it's not the silver Verizon car. I mean, it's still a Verizon sponsor, but it's Verizon 5G. He's run a car similar to that in the 500 a couple of times. But this will be matte black instead of just like a shiny black color. Looks pretty good.
Yeah.
But the car I like the most, I think, is the Scott McLaughlin PPG car, which he will run for 10 races. The other seven to be determined as far as the livery scheme for McLaughlin. But it's PPG with, it's kind of got like a rainbow kind of running through on the side. It looks very sharp.
I agree. I really like it. So two good ones. You know, the PPG car last several years, I think it was kind of boring, and it's just that all blue.
Yeah, it's blue and white.
Yeah, so adding some color to it definitely makes a splash for me.
They tested at Sebring the other week. Pato O'Ward had the fastest time. We're not going to run down the full list of times. To me, I'm always curious on, you know, how did, you know, Jimmy Johnson do, or, you know, someone lower on the, you know, totem pole or newer to the series. And on this test, no Ganassi, but there are 14 guys there. Scott McLaughlin last, but he was like 5/1,000ths of a second behind Hunter Ray. So yeah, who was a spot ahead of him. And they're all within basically a half, you know, 7/10ths of a second from Pato O'Ward all the way back to McLaughlin. So not really a whole lot you can take away there. Also, this I find interesting. This from Chad200 on Twitter. So Elio and Alexander Rossi join a list of drivers who've won the Indy 500 and the Rolex 24. So those two, obviously. Dixon, Montoya, Foyt, Franchitti, Leyendijk, Mark Donohoe, Bobby Rahal, Buddy Rice, Al Unser, Al Unser Jr., Dan Weldon, and Tony Kanaan.
How about
the
that?
List. And this is especially fascinating. A driver has never won the Rolex 24 and the Indy 500 in the same year.
Really?
Yeah. So, learning things.
I'll say.
I would not have guessed that.
Pretty cool.
So, something to keep in mind. Don't pick Elio or Rossi to win the 500 in 2021.
Precisely.
All right. A couple other notes to get to. Justin Timberlake has joined the ownership group for the Music City GP.
Yeah, at first I was like, whoa, but is it just like, I don't know, ceremonial? Like, what is JT really going to do?
I don't know. I'm assuming these people have a financial stake.
Yeah.
It's a private event. It's not put on by the city.
I mean, I hope it means a big thing. I'm just not going to get excited about it. If they listed a lot of people today. There was like 15 people on that list.
But I think those are all like investors, owners.
Yeah. So, I mean, the good thing is, obviously, it has solid financial backing. This is not a thrown together crapshoot of a street course race. This actually has meat behind it. It has dollars behind it. So I think you have to look at it that the race is just one aspect of this weekend, this entire investment that they're putting into. And it's not, you know, I feel it can't be a dud of a race for sure in terms of crowd. But at the same time, I think they've built in other avenues of making money, of income with this thing.
All right. Some other notes to get to. In fact, keeping it with the Music City GP, they tweeted out they expect 5 to 6 wide going into turn one.
Ooh la la. Race.
So I'm excited for the first lap caution.
But yeah, I was going to say, is it going to be like the GP where here comes turn one and then you just have cars all over the place?
And then everyone complains like, see, we get this exciting race and they crash the opening lap and everyone gets bored because the caution takes too long to clean up. And
yeah, you know.
I'm already seeing the complaints now.
Sometimes I like, you know, safe starts. Let's just get through a couple laps and settle in. But, you know, we'll see.
Andretti Autosports tweeted this out. The Andretti family announced the Check It for Andretti Charitable Foundation, honoring John's mission of awareness, early detection, and prevention. So they take that campaign, turned it into a full charity, which is
pretty
very,
cool.
Very cool for
them.
Yeah,
most definitely.
All right. And with that, anything that we missed?
I don't think so. Looking through, you know, yeah, a lot of Grosjean stuff. And you don't, how much of the Rolex 24 did you take in?
Probably approximately 2 hours.
Oh, really? How much? I actually watched a solid probably 25 minutes, which is good for me. I mean, that's probably the most Rolex 24 I've ever watched. Every time I tune in, I'm learning a little bit more, but I'm still very confused. I was lucky because right when I turned it on, they were doing a race recap. So they were kind of showing the highlights, and there was some really good racing. And Caleb, you were texting me, hey, you know, this last hour and less is going to be pretty exciting. I never did turn it on. I was at work at the time, but from what I saw, it was pretty exciting, and it helps when a lot of names you see you recognize.
Well, yeah, I think that's part of it. You always have around a dozen plus guys who are in IndyCar or have raced IndyCar in the past, so you know them. And then you throw in some NASCAR guys, and you throw in like the top sports car guys that I at least recognize their name. I always enjoy, I never really catch the start, but I always enjoy watching, you know, half hour to an hour before I go to bed, like late Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking like after midnight.
Yeah.
And I watch for, I don't know, probably 45 minutes up to an hour then. And then I watch a little in the morning. Then I watch like the final 45 minutes, and was looking like it'd be an amazing finish because the top two were separated first for a while. It was about a second. Then it was down to less than half a second. And unfortunately, the Chip Ganassi Racing Cadillac had a blown tire right as they were like right there with a few minutes left. And it was looking like it could even be like a photo finish. So it was amazing that it was that close through the course of how long the race is. But it's, I don't pretend to be an expert or know that much about sports car racing, but it's something. It's a start. We'll have Daytona 500 here in a week and a half.
Yeah. Which I legitimately do get excited about Daytona because to me, it really is the first step into getting out of wintertime. That's really when you start going, okay, we're seeing the end of winter, of this bleakness. And obviously, the start of auto racing comes with that, but that's kind of the signal, okay, we're getting closer to racing, to IndyCar, we're getting closer to baseball, we're getting closer to warmth. That's kind of the kickoff.
To me, the Daytona is like the halfway point of winter because February is just brutal. Well, March, I expect to be better, but it's always disappointing. And then April, where we live, is also usually cold until like very late
April.
It
is true. I mean, you at least, you know, in March, you're starting to mix a day at 50, maybe once or twice during the month. I mean, there's some January and February just brutal. And, you know, we're about to start a week here, 8 days where, there, you know, it doesn't get out of the teens here, which is our first real hit of Arctic air all season. But, yeah. Daytona, at least, you know, kind of you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. But we were talking about the Rolex 24, and while we think that an IMSA race will come to Indianapolis at some point, probably not a 24-hour race, probably not even a 12-hour race. But we mentioned, you know, maybe the perfect scenario would be a 6-hour, 42-minute race, signifying the winning time for Ray Haroun. The inaugural Indianapolis 500. Do we feel like that at least some sort of endurance race is coming to Indianapolis in the near future?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it could happen as early as next year, depending on how things go the rest of this year. I think a sports car race will come to Indy. And, you know, they had back in the day when they did the Super Weekend for Cup, they had, you know, back then, what was it, the Nationwide Series back then?
Yeah.
And then they had Cup, and then they also had Grand Am race a year or two, which was the split series of sports car racing that was owned by NASCAR, because they used to have the American Le Mans series and then Grand Am, and then those two rejoined forces, I don't know, five or so years ago.
Gotcha.
And now it's a much better series, but
yeah.
it's something I definitely see happening, and I'm hopeful because that, I think, one, we're going to want to go to that. Two, it'll help me see sports car racing in person, because I don't think I've ever seen sports car racing in person.
I have not either. Definitely. Here's a quick quiz question here. With the 1911 Indianapolis 500, the first one run, there were 40 cars that started that first Indianapolis 500. How many finished on the lead lap, Caleb?
Two.
No.
Really?
Yeah. 12 cars finished on the lead lap.
Wow. Well, did they? Used
well, they
to,
kept going, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, they used to. So I was going to say they used to score stuff differently.
Yeah, they scored different because
they used to let them run out, you know, and then they changed that. Years
that's
later.
True. I still feel bad for David L. Bruce Brown, finished third. Man, led 81 laps. Just what could have been.
I always feel bad for, is it Ralph DePalma who led like laps 1 through 198 in 19? Was it 12? And then his car failed. He pushed
did
his
he?
Car
oh,
across the line.
He led four laps in that inaugural one. Let's look at the 2012 one here real quick.
1912.
Yeah. I don't think he finished the 2012 one either. But
One of the races, though, he led a ton of laps and his car failed.
Oh, my gosh. He led 196 laps in the 1912 Indianapolis 500.
Yeah. And he didn't win.
And you know what kind of engine that had? Or no, the whole car. Car, chassis, engine was all built by
Peugeot?
Mercedes.
That was my second guess.
Junk.
Yeah, they've never had success at Indianapolis before.
Yeah.
In any capacity.
Yeah, the National Motor Vehicle Company, of course, won the 1912 Indy 500 with Joe Dawson. Led the final two laps.
There you go.
That's wild. I didn't know. I knew De Palma led a bunch of laps one year and didn't win. I didn't know it was that many. 196. The connecting rod didn't finish.
That darn connecting rod.
Yeah. It also took out Bert Dingley, of course. He was a rookie that year. Good old Bert. Also bit by that pesky connecting rod. This is fascinating.
You love to get sidetracked.
I do. Absolutely.
Sometimes I'm like, is he doing this on purpose?
No, I just, it's a rabbit hole I go down, and then I don't realize what my initial point was, and I can't find it. And then you have to corral me back in.
The initial point was the length of the first 500 being the time for a sports car race.
Which I think, you know, they do what, the 6 hours of, was it, where are they at, Watkins Glen? What do they do 6 hours at? I can't remember, but they, you know.
Petit Le Mans at Road Atlanta, maybe?
Okay, yeah.
Is that it?
So, yeah, I mean, so they do those types of races, and I think, you know, that would be pretty cool.
Because they do 12 hours of Sebring, Rolex 24. Yeah, it might be 6 hours of the Glen, and then they usually do Laguna Seca, Long Beach, Detroit.
Yeah, I think so.
And a few other
races. Yeah, it's
races.
6 hours at the Glen.
There you go. See, you know more sports car racing than you think.
Yeah. So, yeah, it'd be pretty cool. Endurance race, add that somewhere on the schedule. You don't have to change anything. You just do road course.
All right. Are you ready for Tweets of the Week now?
Yes, because I'm excited about this one that we all got a kick out of.
Okay, that's not the first one.
Okay.
First one's from Marco Andretti. This referring to the Rolex 24. At this rate, the race won't be over until tomorrow.
That is funny because it was true.
Luke Smith F1, IndyCar 2021, where a 7-time NASCAR champion, a 3-time Supercars champion, and an F1 driver of 10 years are battling for Rookie of the Year.
What a world we're in. That goes back to, imagine that statement 10 years ago, even. It's wild.
5 years ago, even.
Right?
I mean, Montoya coming back to IndyCar was a huge deal. And then, yeah, the 2016 500 would have been, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But even then, if someone would have told you then the following year that, yeah, Fernando Alonso is going to race the 500 next year, you would have been like, yeah right.
And you know, you felt, okay, is that just going to be a one-and-done thing? But as you mentioned earlier, Caleb, it just really opened the door, opened the eyes of a lot of people, particularly in Formula One.
All right, so this next tweet, our favorite. So IndyCar and NBC, I don't know what they were thinking, but this trio will be fun to watch. Who's your pick to win Rookie of the Year? And, of course, it's a picture of Scott, Jimmy, and Romain. And Nathan Brown of the Star saying, the guy running all 17 races, including one that pays double points. Just a hunch.
Epic trolling by Nathan Brown there. I don't know. Yeah, like you said, I don't know what they were thinking. If they think that's voted on, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
It ain't.
Yeah, it's not voted on like it is for the 500.
Right. Exactly.
Thought that was really funny. And
what could be worse if they put Rookie of the Year of the 500, considering two of them aren't racing the 500?
That's true. That is very, well, for now.
For now, true.
All right, well, that wraps up this week's episode. Next week, we are set to be joined by a special guest. So stay tuned, but make sure to download the podcast next week for a special guest that we are set to have on. Not going to say who it is, but it will be very exciting and very much looking forward to it. But for Justin Kinney, I am Caleb Hatch, and thanks for joining us on New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.